We are back. College Golf Talk front and center. Burko and Brentley with you. Women's Regional Selection Show in the books earlier on this Wednesday. We're sitting down late on this Wednesday evening. We'll go over the Women's Regional Selections, Brentley. And I think we're on maybe year three of having Justin Silverstein, the women's head golf coach at USC, to share his thoughts, provide a little intel, and see how far off we will be with our selections.
It's a tradition unlike any other. Are we allowed to use that?
Jim Nance came up with it, and Augusta National trademarked it, so I would tread lightly.
So how about a tradition like nothing other? Is that too close?
I don't know. You'd have to go to the patent lawyers and all those folks.
Yeah. I'm licking my wounds a little bit right now, Burko. We have an NBA basketball team that for 12 years, 13 years, has not signed or drafted a player who can shoot a three-pointer. It's kind of like having a college golf team where you have seven or eight players and none of them can make putts. It just doesn't make any sense. So we stink again, and we're on to college golf.
Yeah, what I say, the Magic are good enough to be good. And they're not good enough to be any better. They will lose in five games to the Celtics. And the Celtics could win it all. Probably not. But they're as good as any team in the league. But this is what we're here for. Late April, it started in early September. And the best month of the college golf season is upon us. So I know you've got pen and paper. We're going to keep each other honest, see what eight or nine seed comes out of a region or two to, turn things upside down. But without further ado, we welcome in Justin Silverstein, the man leading the women of Troy of USC. Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for taking the time. Before we sort of delve into the regionals that were announced earlier today, this is normally your time of year. It seems like USC starts peaking at conferences, if I'm not mistaken, has won more regionals than any other women's program, but maybe not quite where you want them to be. How would you sort of assess where this group is at arguably the most important time of the year?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. We've created a nice little tradition here that I look forward to, so appreciate you guys having me on for a little chop session. We've had a pretty good season, but tough week last week at Big Ten. It's definitely not what we were looking for. I think kind of looking back at our prep work needed to be a little sharper. So it might be a blessing in disguise because we had a really good day of practice today. We're able to adjust a few things. That schedule towards the end of the regular season with Augusta got really truncated for us. There were four of us that flew straight from Augusta to Silverado, played a nice event there. We played really nicely up there, lost by a shot to Northwestern. And then only had a couple days off to prep for Big Tens and then flew all the way over to Maryland. So I think it was a little bit of a schedule crunch and our staff could have done a better job getting this team ready and kept them fresh. But we learned from it and we'll learn from that loss we took up in Maryland and I hopefully spin it to a good performance in Kentucky. So I like what we've put together this season. I think we've done a lot of good stuff and I think we'll be in good position to play well over the next couple weeks.
Speaking of Kentucky, you're headed to Lexington Keen Trace Golf Club. Before we sort of assess and pick who we believe will move on, what do you know about it? What might this serve you and your team well to finish in that top five?
I knew absolutely nothing about it until about 4 hours ago. Once I got back from practice, I started calling some people on tour that I knew that played in the Barbasol, some of the caddies. Started trying to mine some of the ShotLink data that's available from those events to kind of see what was going on there. But from what it looks like a classic golf course, which I love. Relatively flat greens from the Straka book copy that I saw. And it looks actually pretty cutter friendly. And that's something I got across the board from the PGA Tour players and caddies I spoke to, which will be good for us. Because 80% of our starting lineup likes to move it left to right, especially off the tee. So I really like that. I think kind of the cool part that I saw just right off the bat when I saw the seeds and the teams flash up was the individuals at this tournament are crazy. There's going to be a lot of Wagger points on the line here. Four of the top seven, Anwa winner, Big 12 champ and the Asia Pacific AM champ are in this field. So team part, obviously more important this time of year, but the individual race at this regional is going to be pretty well contested too.
You mentioned the flat greens, Justin. Does that typically favor great putters or bad putters?
Probably neutralizes great speeders on the greens, and probably benefits, or does it penalize more aggressive putters quite as much? It's kind of what we've seen. We played a tournament earlier this year at Monterey Country Club in Palm Desert with crazy flat greens. And I mean, Jasmine absolutely ran the tables on those greens. She gained over six that week. So right off the bat, when I saw the Straka book, I sent her a couple pictures and was like, I think we found a course you're really going to like. So to answer your question, I think it neutralizes people with great speed and doesn't penalize people who hit their putts really hard quite as much.
We take a look at the 12 teams, six regionals across the country, 12 in each, top five move on. And as Justin just touched on, there's also that individual component of players representing the schools by themselves. Their teams did not qualify, but from top to bottom in Lexington, Florida State, USC, TCU, Vanderbilt, Kansas State, there's your top five. Then Georgia Southern, Pepperdine, Louisville, Miami, Western Kentucky, Morehead State, FDU, rounding out those dozen, headed to Lexington. Where are you sort of identifying, Brentley, to start with you, of is this chalk? What are the five? Because I quick glance, I struggle to find someone coming from 6, 7, 8, 9 to maybe ruffle some feathers.
Yeah, I was looking at all of these, and I think one thing that probably favors more of the chalk is the fact that we don't have a host that's maybe a 6 or 7 or 8 seed like we see in a Norman regional, something like that. A few things stand out to me here. One is the 3 seed TCU. They won Kentucky's tournament here in the fall. So that's one of the few, I feel like there's 4 or 5 teams that are heading to a regional where they've seen the golf course this season, which, correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, that's a women's only thing, right? Where you're allowed to play the course. The men actually have a rule, against that, where you can't play the regional site that year. 'Cause I know like Florida State's hosting, they had to host their event somewhere else. So, that's right, Justin?
Yeah, as far as I know, that's correct.
Okay. And then the second thing that stands out is I feel like with the Power Four now in those conferences, they've kind of picked up your better mid-majors, at least traditionally. Maybe not, you know, your Pepperdines, they're always going to be good. San Jose State's been good. But we haven't seen too many mid-majors kind of crack the top 25 this year. And, you know, going into the regionals, Georgia Southern right now is 34th in the rankings. They're the highest ranked mid-major. I think they're actually probably have a really good chance to get through, just because they've won 6 times. They're well coached. I feel like they're going to be in semi-familiar territory, similar grass as to what they're used to. And you look at historically, 4 seeds have only advanced 9 out of 18 times since 2022. Vanderbilt could be a team that's in trouble. So that's kind of what initially stands out to me about this region.
What else do we need to know, Justin, as you've learned quickly over the course of the last few hours, this golf course and your breakdown of teams that could surprise good or bad out of Kentucky?
I think the travel component is always a huge part of regionals, east to west, west to east. It seems like this is pretty well balanced, which coming from the west, I kind of like us and Pepperdine are going to be making a trip from LA. And I think just how quickly people who aren't used to that type of grass can get used to what Kentucky grass at this site has to offer. It's going to be very sticky, rough. I don't know what their growth has been. I talked to somebody who plays at this course pretty regularly earlier today, and he said it wasn't quite as thick as it normally is this time of year. But as you know, as soon as that heat pops in late April, early May, that grass can get going pretty quick. So I think that'll be the biggest adjustment for a lot of these teams that are coming in. Teams that are used to heavy Bermuda or teams that are used to West Coast grass like us are going to have to make that adjustment in one day, which is a hard part of college golf. So we get one practice round. So I think whoever can make that adjustment quickly will be better off in those first round, second round, and have a little less stress going into that final round.
You know, Brentley, you sold me because I hate going chalk. I'm going to go top three, Vandy out, Kansas State and Georgia Southern. You sold me on the folks from Statesboro.
Well, that's what I was going to do. So
well, that's all right.
We're the same that's there. Right. I do feel like Florida State's probably going to win this regional. They've just been really hot. And anytime you have the top two amateurs in the world, no offense to the women of Troy, but Florida State's just been on just a heck of a roll. You look at what they did last week. I mean, it's not easy to win a conference championship, let alone your first in history, let alone the same week that you have a tragedy at your campus and you find out in the middle of your third round. So Amy's done a really good job getting all of these girls to kind of buy in. And I feel like in terms of her strength as a coach, she really does a good job of injecting confidence in her players who may not have had it when they've gotten to school. They've had like the game, but they haven't been able to kind of get the most out of their game because they haven't been confident. And she's gotten Mirabelle, she's gotten, you know, Lottie to be more confident. She's really gotten these players to believe, and you know, they're starting to play some of their best golf that I've seen this program play in a long, long time.
Yeah, the growth of the Seminoles from the Folds of Honor in September to now, from quite honestly players not named Mirabelle Ting and Lottie Woad, to me is the reason why they've won the ACCs. Granted, Lottie hasn't finished out of the top three, and Mirabelle's maybe lost about five or six golfers this year. But as we all know, those are only two components. You need to have three others playing well, and they proved that. So we are the same there, Brentley. We'll go from Lexington to Charlottesville, hosted by Virginia. You got South Carolina, Virginia, Ole Miss, Florida, UCLA, your top five, UCF, College of Charleston, NC State, BYU, Princeton, Richmond, and Radford. Those are the dozen there in Charlottesville. Even though you're not worried about that, Justin, that's why we love having you on. You know, it feels, for the most part, it's an SEC, ACC flavor, except UCLA that has to make that long journey.
Yeah, that's the thing I had written down right here, is three out of top four SEC. They're going to have a lot of familiarity with who they're playing with. And again, anything that can provide you comfort this week for the players and the coaches, you'll take it. So those teams are going to know those people they're playing with. That just gives you a little peace of mind with what you're doing. You know, UCLA and BYU are going to have some travel stress. West to east is harder in this sport because it's an early rising sport. But UCLA knows how to handle it. They just got back from Maryland, and I came away from that. We played with them in the final round where they had to finish solo seventh, I believe, or better. And they were keenly aware of what they had to do to be above 500. And our entire team was just so impressed with how they handled that. Both Alicia, their head coach, and Aaron, their assistant coach, were just calm as can be out there. And their players were just very business as usual. So I would expect the travel not to, you know, impact them too much. Having come back from Maryland recently, that's a little bit of a concern, I'm sure, for Alicia, but there's a nice little break right now. And I think they can kind of use that positive mojo that they had that final round in Maryland and maybe turn that into a good early start up here in Charlottesville to try to crash this SEC party.
Brentley, what do you got there at UVA?
I think this is a UCLA trend here, having to travel all the way across the country, although I think Alicia's handled it a little bit better than their men's hoops coach in terms of what the response is to the media. But, you know, I had a hard time picking against UCLA here because I feel like the narrative with them all year has been they didn't get off to a good start. Then you lose Zoe and Caroline Canales, their two best players. I feel like everyone at that point kind of left them for dead. And yeah, they didn't play well at Darius. Yeah, I thought their performance at Big Tens was pretty admirable just because of the pressure of trying to keep your season alive. I'm not so sure that, like, they're pretty, like, aptly ranked. Like, fifth is probably where I would have them. And so I actually think they get through. I got chalk all through this regional. South Carolina is going to get through easily. Virginia, obviously, hosting. This is another course that hosted an event in the fall, although I'm not sure so sure how much you actually glean from that tournament, because they were dealing with the effects of Hurricane Helene, kind of the outer bands going through the remnants of that storm. And so it was just very rainy, very wet. And I was talking to Rhea yesterday, and she said, like, whoever has seen this course before probably won't recognize it if they saw it in the fall. So, you know, I think they get through. Caitlin McNabb's been playing a lot better. I think this was around the time last year that she started to struggle for them. And, you know, as she goes, that team goes. And then Florida, I mean, we know the narrative with them. They haven't made the national championship since 2019. Could this be the year they get the confidence of making that final match at SECs? We'll see if Emily can get what's a very young team to get up for this. But I guess when you're young, right, Berko, you don't have the scar tissue of like they weren't on those teams that failed all those times. So I think they'll be all right. So I got chalk there.
Yeah, it could be helpful for the folks from Gainesville to finally get to the finish line, if you will, and make it to the NCAAs. You know, in the selection show, Anna Jackson asked me about the Bruins, and I have big question marks, and I still have big question marks, taking nothing away from what they did at the Big Tens. I just don't know if I can find another team that I feel remotely confident in. I still don't think UCLA is going to make it, and that's not a knock on them. I've been around way too long. I think about Alabama 7-8 years ago. You lose Kristen Gilman and Lauren Stevenson in the middle of the year to pro golf, and they went from the best team in the country to a team that couldn't break 300.
And they still haven't made the same.
No, you're right. Sadly, it hasn't. And there are multiple teams that have dealt with that. I mean, you know, the folks at USC have dealt with it from time to time. But when you lose Zoe Campos, top 10 player in the world, Caroline Canales, I'm in a ballpark, top 20, top 30, top 40, that's tough to replace. And there have been moments where Fiorellini stepped up, won a tournament shortly after those two departures. I can't wrap my hands around them getting through. So I like you, I've got the top four. Give me NC State. Give me the Wolfpack as the 8th seed.
They were fourth here in the fall. I know I said that doesn't mean much, but I guess it means a little bit. And Lauren Olivares hasn't been playing quite her best, but, I mean, this is a girl who shot 60 in college golf before. So,
yeah, it's just too easy to go 1 through 5. And maybe the Bruins expended so much just to get here. I don't know that. I can't feel it, for lack of a better term. And doing this as long as I have, I can't buy it right now. Columbus, Ohio, the Buckeyes hosting their regional. Arkansas, LSU, Ohio State, Kansas, Houston, your top five. SMU, UNLV, Illinois, Kent State, Illinois State, Xavier, and Oakland. The 12 going to the Scarlet Course, which is as good as any. They've hosted national championships for the men, the women, maybe the greatest national championship in the last 30 years played, Stanford and Oklahoma State back in 95 for the men. The one time, or actually twice, that Nota Begay said he saw Tiger Woods miss a putt he should have made to win the national title on two different occasions. There's so much history, so much tradition, and Justin, you were shaking your head. You know how good this golf course is.
It's so good. And I did a ton of research on this place the last week because I thought, based on the math, this was a place we might end up, and probably the highest likelihood we would end up here. We didn't. But on the research I did and the people I talked to, the rough is crazy heavy right now. And I don't know if they're planning to slice it or if they're going to leave it. But if it's anything like it is now, it's going to be a driving contest, or put a premium on driving at the very least. So that's going to matter a lot. Going down the list here, we just saw Illinois at the Big Ten Championship. I was really, really impressed with them. They hit it really, really solidly and really, really hard. They kind of cruised to a third place finish there. Very consistent play that week on a golf course that demanded good driving at a pretty high level up at Bully Rock. So I look at kind of the experience that they got up in Maryland to carry over here. I think that'd be good. I think that's something that they're probably going to stress is, hey, we just went to a golf course that's somewhat similar. Let's take what we did well there, build on the things that we need to improve, and we might be in a really good spot. So, but like you said, Berko, this is an amazing site. We need more sites like this because as a coach, you want a site that's going to separate really good golf from really mediocre golf. Well, this place is going to do that because it's going to spit out the bad.
Brentley, what do you got there in Ohio?
Well, with what Justin said, I would think that I'd have to go chalk, but I really like Illinois as an 8 seed as well. I mean, I think they're up 23 spots in the rankings since the end of the fall. You're staying in Big Ten country. We've seen in the past at NCAA championships, at regionals, the Big Ten teams always seem to show out when they stay close to home. So I got the top four plus Illinois. Houston, just, you know, for as good as Garrett Chadwell did building that program and as good as they've continued to be, still have not gotten to a national championship yet, you know, since the women's golf program, you know, got kicked into gear. You know, what was it, back 2016, 2017, something like that. So, you know, I have them out. I love Kansas. I think they've progressively gotten better each year. They really needed Lauren Clark to step up. She had a dismal fall. She was ranked outside the top 300. She's almost inside the top 50 now. She's won three times. You're only as good as your best players. And so I think if Lauren Clark continues to play well, Kansas could, you know, make some noise even once we get over to Carlsbad, California as well. Arkansas has been great all year. I'm not worried about, you know, any sort of being overrated because of the rankings or anything like that. LSU's been great since Moon Golf. And then Ohio State, like, they'll probably win. They won their home event this spring here by 11 shots over Michigan State, who's a really good team. And I actually think if there were odds on individual on who's going to win, I think you got to look at Kari Hollenbaugh. She could win by like 4 or 5 shots here.
She might be the best player in the country. No one knows much about Kari Hollenbaugh can play. Like you guys, I'm bullish on Illinois. Arkansas, obviously, Buckeyes at home. With you on Kansas. I have to do it to do it. LSU's going to not get the job done. We'll see. Rocio Tejedo has played extremely well. Taylor Riley's been trending in the right direction. You know, you referenced Florida a short time ago, Brentley. You're young, you're naive, you're innocent, you don't have the scar tissue. I'm going to make the case that everything Justin said about this golf course, and it's not a knock on them, but the lack of players with a ton of experience in big moments might catch them off guard. And I'm going to throw Kent State in there. So I'm going to go Arkansas, Ohio State, Kansas, Illinois, and Kent State.
A 26 straight MAC championships now? Only team to have ever won the conference? That's, it's hard
not
to
a
do.
Fair fight. Not a fair fight.
No. Well, I mean, really the most impressive thing is the fact that they've stayed in the same conference that long. I mean, you can't – I don't know how many other programs. I mean, heck, even Justin is in a new conference this year. So.
Yeah. It will happen somewhere, I firmly believe, maybe not a one seed, but there's going to be a two or three that just doesn't get the job done. And you go from the Southeast to the Midwest – we had a Corn Ferry Tour event when we broadcast it back in the day. It will test you and it will expose you. And Garrett might use this if he listens. And I believe he and Alexa do listen so they can throw it in my face. But it's too easy to go right down the list and say, this is it. Yet if you filled out your March Madness bracket and picked all number one seeds like my 9-year-old, you'd win the family pool because that's what happens.
I kind of put you in a bad spot there, though. So
No, that's all right. That's all right. I could have just said, no, you did not. It will happen. I firmly believe it. There'll be that 6, 7, 8, 9, and there'll be a slash through a 2 or 3, if not more. So we'll see if I am correct in that. Let's go to Arizona State hosting Gold Canyon, Superstition Mountain, a combo, if you will, of teams from out there in Oregon and Arizona State. Then you've got Auburn and Mississippi State making that trek from east to west, Oklahoma State, Cal, Virginia Tech, San Jose State, Sacramento State, Cal State, Fullerton, Navy, and Quinnipiac from the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference. This is kind of the potpourri of regionals, Justin. This is the leftover 2 days after Thanksgiving. Let's throw all these teams in and see what you get.
This is the way it's supposed to be, though. This is good. We got teams from everywhere. A lot of cool stuff here. A golf course that women's golf is very familiar with. They hosted an LPGA event at Superstition. Perennially, those scores were crazy low. I think we're talking low to mid-20s pretty much every year. They do have new greens, so they're going to be playing on some fresh greens. I think six teams played a little round-robin one-dayer here, or maybe two-dayer in January. So a couple teams have seen it. The 1, 2, and 3 seeds all have an Arizona connection. Derek Radley at Oregon was at Arizona. Obviously, Missy's at Arizona State, and Melissa Wellen, you know, an institution at Arizona State for a long time. The thing that I have here for the golf course is this time of year in Arizona, it's a unique weather time of year. Still chilly, got that nice desert morning, but it gets really hot as the day goes on. The ball's going to be traveling here like most of these teams haven't seen quite yet this fall or this spring. So I think practice rounds and range time here is going to be super important. Figure out how the ball's going at peak temperature and then adjusting to how it's going when you tee off early. Because remember, in regionals, leaders go first. It's going to change as your day goes on. So the teams that can adjust their yardages the best, I think, are going to do really well here. I think Oregon does that as well as any team in the country. I know they've adopted a lot of yardage work with their iron play that a lot of good teams and tour players do now. That team hits it hard as well. So I think they'll be in a really good spot. I do have a team here at the bottom I wanted to mention. I'm sure you guys did not have this on your bingo card. It's Cal State Fullerton.
You love
we played with them at Silverado. They beat the tar out of it. Their top players hit it so hard and really straight that week. They played really nicely up there with us at Northwestern. Their top player was hitting it like 25 to 30 past Jasmine. Jasmine's still talking about it to this day. That will play well here. This is a bomber's paradise. And if those greens aren't crazy firm, I would look for a team that drives it really long to come out of here and maybe surprise some people.
I like it. A double-digit seed, Brentley. You can't start erasing your five coming out of here and putting in Cal State Fullerton. Not going to allow it. The Fighting Phil Nevins. Wasn't he the baseball standout from the early 90s?
Yeah, and then played for the Padres, right?
Correct.
Am I right? First base. He was kind of a slapper, though. He wasn't really a bomber, right?
I think so. He might have been good for about 18 to 25 homers a year. I mean, he was no Aaron Judge.
Yeah, but. I mean, back then, that was like 7 homers now in today's modern era, 18. So, yeah, I don't know if I could go quite to 10 seed. Historically, since 22, since we've had the 6 regionals, and I know the stats are a little bit wonky because we've switched. You know, from 22, we went to 6, and then 23, we went from 4 teams at each advancing to 5 teams out of each advancing. But I still like to kind of draw that line of demarcation at 2022. No 10 seeds have made it through. So could they be the first? I don't know. I like San Jose State as probably my highest seed to get out of this regional. They were one of those teams that played the match in the desert here in January. They finished 5th, which doesn't sound like much in an 8-team field, but there were some good teams there. Arizona State was 2nd. I believe Kansas hosts that, so you have another regional team there. So, and well-coached, they still have some firepower at the top. They don't have the studs kind of 1 through 4 like we've seen in recent years, but you know, I think they could sneak up on some people. Cal's another team. I think they make it through just a little bit of familiarity. On this side, they have they can go fairly deep. Who's their best player, Justin? Her name is escaping me, and I don't want to look it up.
Constance at Cal.
Yeah, Constance Fault. Yeah, that's from France. Yeah, she's really good. She's as good as anyone that we're gonna see in this regional, not named Kiara Romero and Anna Davis. And so I think they get through. I committed the cardinal sin, Burke. I bolded six teams instead of five teams here, so I'm gonna have to do a little bit of adjusting on the fly.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying. But you said you could see Cal and San Jose State, so that means you've got someone in that 3, 4, 5 neighborhood not making it, if not two of them.
Yeah, so I'm gonna unbold. I had Oklahoma State bolded. Greg Robertson's done a really good job getting his teams to the national championship. Oklahoma State's looking for their fifth year in a row getting there. Then obviously Greg had those great teams at Kent State. So, I mean, I think he's probably been to 7 or 8 straight now. I just feel like I have to unbold them just because. I don't think they've been playing super well. Although they did tie for first at the Big 12 championship, lost in a playoff there. I just think it's probably about time that things run out. And then I like Oregon, obviously. They might not have Karen Suru, but I think when you have Kiara Romero on a golf course like this, that's going to force you to make a lot of birdies and hit it far in firm greens. She could win this regional again by a lot. It'd probably be her and Anna Davis from Auburn. Auburn, I have to go with them just because they have the better player between them and Mississippi State. So let's see. I have San Jose State, California, Oregon, Arizona State, and Auburn. I'm going to leave out Mississippi State and Oklahoma State. Mississippi State, you lose Julio Lopez Ramirez, and yeah, I gotta leave someone out. And you know, sorry Charlie, but it's going to be the Bulldogs.
I'm not quite to the level of UCLA. And Justin hit on a great point that Melissa Llewellyn was a standout coach at Arizona State, but that's been a decade plus removed. Anyone not named Anna Davis on Auburn, I feel uneasy about. Mm-hmm. We've seen some very high highs and some very indifferent lows. Then you start talking about a Southern school going out to the desert. We saw that a lot when the national championships were held at Greyhawk. There were a handful of top 10 Southern teams that went out to the desert and unequivocally within 2 days, their coaches said, we have no chance. They don't know how to play it. And it's worked vice versa when West Coast teams came to, well, concession was tough for everyone. So we won't bring that up a decade ago. And as you said, it could be Mississippi State. I'm going to lean towards Auburn not making it. Maybe we've been spoiled with those great complementary players. Whether it was Megan Scofield, and you hesitate to even call her complimentary as a U.S. women's amateur champ. But I'm going to go Oregon, Arizona State. I will take Mississippi State. I will take Oklahoma State and Cal. I draw the line at 6. There's something about Auburn that's not settling with me right now. And I'm not sure a trip 1,800 miles away to the desert is the answer.
Well, I mean, they don't have a player outside of Anna Davis ranked inside the top 100 in the rankings. And their next highest ranked player, Katie Cranston, was just 53rd at SEC. So, you could be right, Burko.
And there have been weeks, not many, that Anna Davis can throw up a tie for 27th. And oh, if yeah. that happens, yeah. game over. I don't know. I just like not picking the top 5. Let's just leave it at that. Let's go to Lubbock, the Rawls course, Texas Tech hosting, but not playing. That's got to be not what you're looking for when you lock up that host.
They were the first team out, Burko, I think.
It was close. What were they, 60, 61? Well, I know.
They were 61st, but UC Davis got in, which is we'll address that at the end of the pod. But UC Davis gets in, and then you had a few teams that were under 500. You had an AQ, and then Texas Tech was the next team up at 61. So, That's got to sting. And I think, you know what? But I think Texas Tech ended up finishing below 500 anyways at Big 12. So it ended up being a moot point. So, but out Tex- nonetheless. Yeah.
Correct. Texas, Wake Forest, Arizona, Texas A&M, Iowa State, Tennessee, Purdue, Campbell. There is that UC Davis, Florida Gulf Coast, Tarleton State, and Texas A&M, Corpus Christi. What do we need to know about the Rawls course, Justin, there in Lubbock?
Did a little research on this one, too. This was my backup plan to Columbus as to where I thought we were going to end up. So link-style golf course, which I think you need in West Texas. And with West Texas typically comes some pretty heavy wind. I think it's going to be really warm and windy. As a coach of a West Coast school that doesn't see much wind, that would be my concern heading to this site. It was my concern when I thought this was where we were going as of midday yesterday, based on some of the numbers. But when I look at this list and I go down, I see six or seven of the top eight that see probably pretty significant wind at practice on a daily, weekly basis. Maybe not West Texas wind, but you're used to it. And that's a big deal because you're not having to adjust on the fly. So I think teams like Texas, Arizona, and I played at Arizona, I know how we can get there this time of year. A&M obviously sees it. Iowa State might have as much wind as any good program in the country. Tennessee, Purdue. I mean, you're seeing a lot of wind. So those kids will be comfortable if it starts blowing 25-ish there, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility one day. But I think the comfortability of Texas, being able to drive to Lubbock, they probably have as good of a postseason coach as any team in the country. I worked for her. I learned a lot of what I know under her. She paces her teams at an elite level. She's kind of the new school Andre Gaston in that regard, where patience throughout the season. Okay, now it's April. We're going to pick it up. We're going to be ready to go come early May. So Lower's as good as there is at that. I think Texas loves this draw, and I think they'll get through here pretty easily.
Yeah, I'm going to start, Brentley, just so you don't think I'm just following you. But for me, I've got the chalk 1 through 5. I'm on board with what Justin said, the job Laura Iannello's done in Austin, inherited a really good team. Referencing the selection show, I think the win for Wake Forest over Stanford in the ACC match play portion of those semifinals, I think is enormous. I think that was a good team that could be really good that now can believe they're good and they can compete with anyone. Giovanna Mimone at Arizona, going from A&M as an assistant of replacing Laura, she's done a really good job. Gary Chadwell's team, maybe not what we had seen in the past. Now, granted, you lose Adela Cernusek halfway through to the NCAA individual champ. But they're too good, I believe, not to advance. And when you stay in your home state, I think that serves you well. And I just don't see Tennessee, Purdue, or anyone below maybe having enough firepower to make a charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got 1 through 4, and then I'll do Tennessee instead of Iowa State. I loved your kind of explanation on Laura's coaching style, because I was just going to say Texas has been super quiet this season. They've just kind of – I mean, I guess it doesn't help when you win a match play event without actually winning the match play event. But I feel like they've kind of flown a little bit under the radar all year, and yet it wouldn't surprise me at all. They have a ton of firepower, probably a lot of players that – the general college golf public don't really know much about. But they've all won big time events internationally in the U.S. Wake Forest, it helped adding Chloe Kovaleski midseason. Golf is one of those sports where, I mean, you're only counting four players. So if you can add a AJJ All-American to that lineup, I mean, you're improving your team. And I think Wake probably improved by adding her, what, like 3 shots around, something like that, 3 or 4 shots around. So maybe a little less than that. So I think she's been a huge boost. Arizona, we saw them at St. Andrews. Like, they can play in tough conditions when it's uncomfortable. Carolina Melgrady is just she's a tough cookie. Like, she's a good leader to have at the top, just someone that's just going to, you know, dig it out of the dirt and, you know, kind of lead you into battle. A&M, I'm a little worried about, just because, you know, like you mentioned, you lose the NCAA individual champion. There's a lot of inconsistency once you get past Kata and once you get past Vanessa Borivolos, their stud freshman. A lot of inconsistency. So we can go either way for them. Real quickly, Tennessee was fourth at Texas's event, so that's why I'm going with them. I'm not going with Purdue because people will look and they'll be like, well, they have, you know, a pretty highly ranked player in Natasha Kiel. Most of that was done in the fall. She won two events in the fall. She's been not nearly as good this spring, to kind of say the least. And then I'm trying to think. Do we want a little Tarleton State factoid, even though I don't think that they're going to get through?
Please.
All right. So this is their first year in as a full-fledged Division I program, and I didn't quite understand what that meant, and I'm sure probably people listening to this, most of them don't know either. I know Justin's never played for a Division II team or coached a Division II team, so probably doesn't know either. But it takes 4 years, I guess, for the transition. And the first two, you can't play in your conference championship, right?
Or the postseason, yeah.
And then the last two, you can play in your conference, but you can't play in the postseason. And so Tarleton, you know, went through their transition process, and this is the first year that they're able to play in an NCAA regional, and they go out, they win the WAC. Their coach, Isabel Jimenez, is she's a former player there. And the funny thing was, and I talked to her yesterday, and she said when they won last week, she logged on to her Facebook, and you know how it brings up the little memory thing. Well, 12 years ago to the day, she had won as a freshman the conference championship in D2, the Lone Star Conference, like April 16th or something like that, 2012 or 2013. Same day, she shared the photo of the team that year. So they're probably not going to get through, surely not going to get through, but it's still a cool Cinderella and a cool story to kind of root for. Because if they pop on the board that first day, people are going to be like, oh, watch out, it's Tarleton. But I think over 54 holes, they'll probably turn into a pumpkin. But great season.
Yeah, great nugget. You hear that probationary period happen periodically in the FBS, FCS. Someone's like, oh, God, we should be playing a bowl game or making March Madness. But arguably the first time I've ever heard it applicable to women's golf or college golf. In general, the final regional, Norman, Oklahoma, Jimmy Austin Golf Club, another really good layout. Stanford, we thought maybe Arizona. They end up going to Oklahoma along with Northwestern, North Carolina, Michigan State, Duke, and Oklahoma. Then you got Baylor, Oregon State, Tulsa, Denver, Furman, and Southern Miss. I mean, you do research, you leave no stone unturned. So I'm certain, Justin, you've got a little something in your back pocket about the Jimmy Austin Golf Club.
I don't have a ton. I haven't been there since 2013 for the women's amateur pub links with Annie Park, where she was medalist, but lost in the first round of match play. We don't want to talk about that. My cool factoid about the list of teams here, Brentley wrote a good article and stole it about Tulsa, moving up 35 spots in the spring rankings. Coach Rutters does a good job. That guy can coach. He can recruit. That program will keep getting better and better. Michigan State, great week at Big Tens. I mean, they played so, so well on that golf course. I have to think that carries over, and them as a four seed would be a little scary as a top seed looking down at that. But this story is Stanford. I mean, this season is incredible. They probably deserve more credit than they're getting. I was lucky to be an assistant coach on a team that was pretty similar. Our 2013-14 team at USC, I think we had three losses during the regular season and then ended up finishing second at the national championship. The weight of that is a lot, and it takes a lot to manage it. And I'm lucky I had Andre Gaston on ahead of me in the totem pole managing that for our year. And Ann Walker's done a wonderful job with that. And they're actually deeper than we were on that 13-14 team. But you're juggling a lot. You're managing a lot of personalities, and they've done a really good job with that. And then I love Northwesterners too. I'm a sucker for that Northwestern team. I think they're a great coaching staff. They play their brand of golf, which you don't really hear in our sport much, right? You hear it in basketball and football. They have a brand of golf they play. They recruit to it and they commit to it. And it's actually quite a pleasure to watch. Our team talks about it a lot when we talk about discipline, which is a word we use a lot in our program. They're the model of that at the level that we play at. So we have the utmost respect for them. A couple of my favorite teams are in this little bracket here. And I think this will be a good one to watch.
Yeah, I'm always bullish on Emily Fletcher, the job she does with Northwestern. I thought a couple years ago was maybe the year they could find their way deep into match play. Piggybacking on what you just said, what I enjoy watching them and following them, they know what they can do, but more importantly, they know what they can't do. And when you're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds, Brentley, sometimes everything's in play. And with them, I feel like they're in that far right lane on the highway. They're not going 75 or 80 or passing, but they're going to get to the exit probably just about the same time you are. And sometimes they'll meander, but I love them. I love the top four there. Duke maybe is inconsistent up and down of a team that I can recall in recent years for Dan Brooks. I mean, there was a point in the ACC stroke play portion, I'm going to say mid-second, early third round, they were last.
Dead last, yeah.
They were last. 10th? They worked their way back up, but they were never going to make match play. That would concern me greatly. Now, if memory serves, one, if not two, of their national championships have come in the state of Oklahoma. I believe the first in 99, and I want to say
Tulsa,
in 14
right?
or 15.
We finished second. Thanks for bringing that
up. Oh, see, I had to bring that up, of course. Yeah, so in 41 years, if Dan Brooks can ever figure anything out, I'll be honest, I don't know if they have the firepower. I don't know if they have the players to get it done, and I don't think we've ever said that about Duke. Baylor, as a 7 seed, finished right on the number 500, similar to the Blue Devils. Moments of, wow, you're really good. And there are other weeks you're like, I'm not sure if this team's that good at all. And I don't mean to be harsh, but this is, you get to the postseason, you sort of got to call it what it is. And then the big circle around the 6 seed for me. I've said it every year. I'll say it till I stop doing it. It's a stroke around for those four players from Oklahoma counting for 3 days. They're 12 clear of the field. Will that 12-shot advantage be enough to get them in? And I'd probably pick them as the fifth team ahead of Duke and Baylor.
Okay, so you have the you have
top
Duke
four
out
in Oklahoma. Yep. I'm going to say no Duke and no Baylor.
Okay. Who's the team in the left lane driving aggressively, trying to pass everyone? Who's that program?
Does it have to be in this regional, or can
it
be anywhere?
It could be anywhere. I'll let Justin answer this too. He could probably get
it's
not the Trojans. I can promise you that. We're in the middle lane. We're in the middle lane.
Yeah. See, I like that. You're a middle laner.
Driving a Tesla, like that's driving itself.
That's great. And she'll probably shoot me. I'll say South Carolina.
I was just
scrolling up and down some teams.
I was just going to say that.
But that's whatever. I've done this long enough, right? let them come after me.
It's 10:30. You know, it's college golf talk after dark. We can do that. Yeah.
What do you like in Norman?
So I was looking at some of these NCAA regional records, and USC has the most 15 titles. I think that was thrown out there earlier. But then longest active streaks of making it through regionals. USC 26, and Stanford is second at 14. So that's,
I would say it's almost doubled up. Yeah.
I mean, that just shows the job that Andre has done, the job that Justin continues to do. And the fact that Stanford's been so good and still has over a decade more to go if they want to catch USC. And that's assuming USC doesn't keep adding to that, which I think that's the plan. But I think it's probably it's probably Ann's fault that we haven't given Stanford enough credit, because for the last like 3 or 4 years, I feel like she's drilled into my head like they don't care about perfect seasons or records or anything like that. And I feel like she's gotten me to believe that. So I think I've said that before on here, but that's probably why, you know, maybe subconsciously we haven't been giving them as much credit as they probably deserve. But this is easily the deepest team. I think Ann was a little surprised that they were sent to Norman, because it's something like they have to travel like 1,600 miles, which is 400 miles more than any other team has to travel. And that team's Oregon, and you know, you have to travel 1,000 miles to get anywhere from Eugene. So I was pretty shocked that they sent, that the committee sent Stanford to Norman as well.
And that, let me quickly interject. So we're fair here. The committee shared, I said it on the show, but I want to make sure, they prioritize seating and bracket integrity over staying close to home, if you will, for those top seeds. So, you know, the S curve is the S curve until it isn't the S curve. And it seems like the S curve got off the rails, one team in this go around.
So tired is S curve, wired is seating integrity. Something
I'm
like
just
that.
Just telling you what the folks in Indianapolis are sharing.
Honestly, makes sense. And you could send Stanford to Mars and they would still probably win this regional by 10 or 15 shots. I'm still waiting for Elise Lee to really break out for Northwestern. I think if they can get her going and get a really solid like third or fourth score, that they could probably be more of a national title contender. I don't think they're that until they get that, though. I had North Carolina out. I know Amy and F's done a great job. They've actually traveled pretty well. They've popped in some events kind of around the country. But you got to leave someone out, because I've been on Michigan State since the COVID year, when I thought that Stacy had probably one of her best teams ever, and that season got cut short. Didn't really get to see what that program could do. They've kind of spun their wheels a little bit since then, but I think they're finally starting to get some really good momentum. I have Duke out as well. You look on the flip side of teams that have dropped in the rankings since the end of the fall, and Duke is right there at the bottom. I mean, I think they've dropped seven spots, but in terms of percentage, they're down about 38%. So that's among the five or six worst. USC is actually down 125%, but you know, that's dropping from,
what is that going from 3 to 7?
4 to 9, something like that. Yeah. That sound about right. Again, that's splitting hairs. Duke's was a little bit more noticeable. It takes a lot to drop 7 spots in the teens, like into the 20s or 25, wherever they're ranked now. So I'm definitely concerned about them. You mentioned Oklahoma as the host. I understand your theory, Burko, but the last time that they played a regional in Norman at Jimmy Austin was 2019. They were a 5th seed, and they did not make it through. So a little bit of bad history. That said, I still have them going through. That's my 4th team. And then my last team, no surprise, is Tulsa. Reuters talked me into it. Did a story on them a few days ago. Really, they added this girl from the Swiss national team, Romaine Massery. And for those who aren't super familiar with the Tulsa program, Annie Young had this team in the last 2 NCAA championships. This is a team that was on the up and up. They lose Lily Thomas, their best player, midseason last year. And then Annie goes back to her alma mater to be an assistant for Greg at Oklahoma State. And then she takes the team's next best player, Grace Kilcrease, with her. So Tulsa, like, they were really close to not having a team. Like, a couple players entered the portal, thought about entering the portals. Reuters got hired mid-July. He was at the Junior Worlds when they called him. It was a Tuesday. He was hired by that Friday, went right to work, didn't have Romaine in the fall. They were ranked outside the top 100, ranked 92, something like that, after the fall. And he's like, look, I could be patient. Like, I think we have something here, but we could really use another player. So he has connections in Europe, being the assistant at South Carolina. calls up the Swiss national team coach. They're like, hey, we got a girl. And Romaine just won the American Athletic Conference Championship. She hasn't been an Ella Galitsky or a Clovy Kovaleski, but like Tulsa's probably a 6 seed, really, instead of a 9. And so I like them. And staying close to home, it all seems to line up. And, I mean, Roters is an absolute madman. I mean, the guy was like a former college baseball player. I think he does like those what are those races where you like are in the mud and like you're racing
the muddy woods. Muddy buddies, muddy
Spartan
buddies.
Races,
savage,
right?
Race.
Yeah, Spartan. Yeah, like the Spartan races. I think he does those. You know, he's a little nuts, but he's coached to, you know, this team to a great season, and I think they get it going. But yeah, that's my thoughts on this regional. Let me see if I missed anything. I don't think I did. We covered Baylor finishing exactly at 500, right?
We did, right? Yeah. on the number.
So I think we're good. I'm feeling pretty good about it, Berko.
I think you've got me. I went a little bit too much out on the limb.
After my embarrassing Augusta National Women's Amateur performance in our snake draft, where I got just absolutely demolished. Like the Orlando Magic.
You're good enough to be good, but you're not good enough to be great.
No, that was we don't even need to do that game anymore because it was so bad. So next year we'll have to think of something else. We're going to have to change the rules. We were doing the rules on the fly. I'm going to blame that. But I'm feeling pretty good.
Just remember who changed the rules on the fly.
Yeah, no, I did. Yeah.
Yes. We went way longer than expected. Always enjoy it. Justin Silverstein, can't thank you enough for a little intel, give a next layer understanding of what it's about. And a final thought from you on, we talk about it all the time, that this 6 week stretch of the postseason is truly what it's all about. But as a coach, and now we're getting to a 4 week stretch, what's the most important thing for you as the leader of this squad to get your team best prepared to play their very best?
Yeah, I think, you know, we spent most of the season working on more macro issues, and this time of year is more about the micro stuff. You got to make sure everybody's feeling good, fresh, as healthy as can be. You know, we have Bailey Shoemaker, who's fighting a little wrist tendonitis, so she's not going to be able to practice as much as she wants to feel fully prepared. I think a lot of teams around the country are probably fighting something similar, so you've got to do other things to make your players feel comfortable and get them ready to go. But at this point in the year, motivation is not the issue. Everybody wants to play great. Everybody's put in the work. It's about kind of honing that in, getting together a good game plan for your 1 through 5, sometimes a sub, getting everyone as comfortable as possible in new sites on the road and seeing how well you can perform. So I think this time of year, I've learned from Andrea and Laura, try not to do too much. Overcoaching probably is worse than undercoaching at this time of year. Your players just got to go play, and your prep work's done at home. So that's what we're trying to do. And I think if you do that, you'll be in a good spot, and you got to go let your horses run. And there's my pun, because we're going to Lexington.
I like that. And we expect the streak to continue. What would it go to, 27 in a row, Brentley? Or is that just actually getting regional bids or making it 10 CAs, where you said USC's 26 and Stanford's 14?
It would be 27 straight NCAA championships this year if they make it through. So we can't count it yet. But Justin, did you have that joke written down? Were you waiting to use that? Or?
No, but I did want to try to get some Derby picks from you guys because we were flying in the day before the Derby. And I was just on our phone with our ops person. And I'm like, there's going to be literally nobody in Lexington Friday and Saturday. We're going to be the only human beings there because everybody's going to make the trek up to Churchill Downs.
Well, who's
I will have to do some
favorite?
Intel. Yeah, I'll have to do some intel to at least give you an educated guess. I couldn't even tell you who the favorite is.
I'll give you guys a quick tip. I do like ponies. It's completely legal NCAA-wise. Journalism won the Santa Anita Derby a couple weeks ago, the grade one race. That horse gets off the line quick. That's a good one to watch. Probably going to be the betting favorite, so not going out on the limb there.
What's the name?
Journalism. I remember someone posted about that.
Oh, that, well, there's, that, I think there's no way that horse is going to win. Come on.
Well, that's what they said. In a dying industry, what are the odds of journalism is, you know, the one perfect, that stands right? tall? Exactly.
Well, draw is Saturday, so we don't even know who's in yet.
Well, they got a pool that they go from, and then they're going to pick post lanes, and then we're going to get moving.
You're way into it being out in California. I don't think we race. Well, actually, no, we got Tampa Bay Downs over in Tampa.
Oh, uh-huh. And you got Ocala is good of an area in the country for. Well, I mean, you've got triple crown winners that have been
Horses, not racing.
That's
horses.
Where it all starts, Brentley. It doesn't just start when you show up at the post at Santa Anita.
Florida's like the farm system. You know, they enter the transfer portal. You know, they're D2. They enter the transfer portal. They go to USC, and you know, they win national titles and regional titles, and then they race in the Kentucky Derby.
There you go.
Hey, do you think Louis Oosthuizen is he going to have a horse in the Derby at some point? Because he's from Ocala, he's got a farm. I think he's got horses.
He's got his farm. He has his all his John Deere tractors and equipment. And a very good friend of mine from college plays golf with him quite frequently in Ocala. And as he told me, he shot 70 and he watched 11 birdies and 63, but put up on him effortlessly. So he said, Louis is loving life. And I miss Louis. Old Louis. He was the best. No, I don't think he's going to be putting a horse up, but you never know. Justin did not stay up late for this, even though he's on the West Coast. We are going to let you go. Always appreciate it, my friend. Great catching up. Best to you and the team, and plan on seeing you at La Costa a month from now.
Thank you, fellas. We appreciate you guys. All the coaches do.
Likewise, you're the best. Hey, Justin Silverstein, head women's golf coach from USC. He's the best. I love it. We thought we might go here, so we did Intel. And as we wrap things up, he sort of described, if you read between the lines of what college golf has become in a lot of avenues around the land, of the minutiae, the details, the numbers, the stracola, it's changed. And for the most part, I think better. I mean, everyone says, why are these young kids, boys and girls, men and women, having so much success on the LPGA and PGA tour? I think it's that. I think that's a big part of it. You know, it's technology, the better fitness, better athletes. But I truly think when they leave college for 2, 3, 4 years under somebody like Justin, they're ahead of the curve. I firmly will bank that.
Yeah, and I was talking to another coach yesterday and just talking about, I don't think people realize that college golf is a lot like college basketball and that you have really distinct different coaching styles. Like you have in basketball, you have the coach who's really good with X's and O's. You might have the recruiter, you have the motivator. I guess all sports kind of have that, but golf certainly. And Justin is, you know, when I think of analytics and preparation and practice and development, like he's at the top of that list. I mean, he's learned under some of the best. Chris Zambry certainly comes to mind. And he does a really good job. So if you're a player who struggles with that, I mean, we think about Jasmine Koo, like didn't know her full yardages coming into college golf, like didn't really, I don't know if she didn't use a yardage book, but didn't know, like had no course strategy at all. Just went for every flag, relied on talent. Like those types of players, they go to, you know, to play for a coach like Justin Silverstein. You get a lot better doing that. And then you have other coaches who are better motivators and are really good this time of year. Like you mentioned, Laura Iannello, like just really good about managing, you know, people and personalities and getting her players to peak at the right time, both physically and mentally, all of that stuff. So, it's interesting. It's always good to have him on too. I actually enjoyed this year's kind of selection show process and getting the fields and the bracketology that I did, because you could throw my bracketology out the window. It was completely wrong. And all of these coaches, clearly, I mean, Justin's one of the smartest ones we got out here, and he was even thrown for a loop. So the committee, I like the surprise. I think we need to do more of this. We need to, you know, do some things that catch people off guard. And the one recommendation I would have, and you've been doing this a long time, and you know, probably remember when Golfstat used to do this, but Golfstat wouldn't update the rankings about a week out. So they'd update them through the first few days of conference championships, but they wouldn't update it. So you wouldn't have ACCs in there. You wouldn't have Big Tens in there, Pac-12s, SECs. And so you were left guessing. I would love for Scoreboard to not update the rankings the night before.
Give, I like it.
Like, just... You can update them behind the scenes so the committee has
them. Let the people have. Yeah, exactly.
But let there be some suspense because, you know, I could tell you right now, UC Davis probably was not expecting to get in. The moment that they see their name up on the screen this afternoon was probably amazing. Like, yeah, that's the feeling that these basketball teams that are on the bubble have when they, you know, and conversely, the heartbreak too. So, like, I want more of that. I want less surprise. It seems like golf, there's not a ton of surprises. Signing day is kind of anticlimactic. I'd love for, like, if that – I think I've asked that question a few times, right? What would you change about college golf? That would be the thing that I would change or go back to, is having a hidden ranking the last week, making us all guess and have some really true surprises in moving teams in and around the line on the bubble and – you know, shifting teams in and out and not just going based off the rankings. But
yeah, well, yeah, there'd be a lot of moving parts to make that happen, but that seems to be the easiest because for as many years as we've done these selection shows, both you and I have had producers say, all right, like who's the team on the bubble or this and that? I'm like,
we know
no, it's kind of, we pretty much know what it is. Maybe there's one on either side of it, but it's not going to be like March Madness where there's maybe three, four, five teams thinking they're in or out and vice versa. But we're here. We're front and center. May 5, 6, and 7, these six regionals will take place. The men's regional selection show next Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll be up in Connecticut. You'll be wherever you are, part of the show.
Right here.
So we're looking. Yeah, well, why move when you don't have to? This one went an eternity, but it was a blast. Once again, our thanks to Justin Silverstein for joining us. And our thanks, as always, to each and every one of you for tuning in to College Golf Talk. We'll see you next week.